Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, July 31st, 2026. We turn first to page one, where the main story is about the McLean County Fair, headlined, Fair and Incredible 4-H Experience. Youths show and share bonds with animals and learn ag life. This story is datelined Bloomington. Cabe Hamlow takes care of his many rabbits at his home in Saybrook, but on Wednesday, the first day of the 2026 McLean County Fair, the 11-year-old brought three of them to the 4-H show, Jellybean, Midnight, and Twilight. One got third, one got fifth, and then one got fourth, he said before correcting himself, first. 4-H youths from around central Illinois showed a wide variety of animals on Wednesday, including turkeys, sheep, goats, pigs, llamas, horses, and, of course, rabbits. This is Cabe's third year showing rabbits, said Caitlin Hamlow, his mother. She grew up coming to the McLean County Fair to show pigs, and getting to share this experience with her children is a bit of a full-circle moment, she said. This is wild, so I showed pigs, and then I went on into college and got degrees in animal science because I love the animal part of this so much, Hamlow said. But she did not know a lot about rabbits until Cabe showed an interest. We're all learning every year what it means to show rabbits, but so far we've had really great years back to back, and so we're pretty excited about it, Hamlow said. One thing they've picked up is the usefulness of rabbit droppings in the garden, she said. Fun fact, rabbits have cold nitrogen poop, so you don't have to let it age. You can just put it right in the garden, she added. So lots of gardeners and master gardeners like rabbit poop for their garden. Hayworth's Emma Quinton, 18, has been showing horses in 4-H for over a decade. She and Cash, a 14-year-old paint horse, displayed their skills in an egg and spoon show Wednesday, where she held an actual egg in a spoon while riding at various speeds. We did fun classes today, but not any actual judging classes for me today, she said, smiling. Riding a horse is a skill that requires constant learning, Quinton said. You ride a bike and you learn how to ride it once, and then you've learned what there is to learn. But when you're riding a horse, there's always more you can learn, she said. So it's just continually learning, continuously working hard to better yourself and to better the partnership between you and the animal. She described that partnership with horses as like one might have with a family dog. You can communicate with that dog differently than anybody else can. Like you can read its expression, how it's feeling differently than anybody else can, Quinton said. It's kind of the same with a horse. Like you learn kind of what they're saying. It's a very subtle thing. You learn to read their body language. And when you're on them and riding, everything that you do communicates to the horse. And you can feel a lot what they're doing and how it's communicating to you. So it's really each horse is different. And that's the big part of riding horses, just kind of learning how to communicate to them and learning how they're communicating back to you. She does talk to Cash, and it might be helpful if he ever answered. Sometimes I wish maybe he would, Quinton said, smiling. Maybe he'd give me some insight. Elsewhere in the Food and Farm Fun Zone, youngsters were learning where their food grows, said Fair volunteer Lindsay McCormick. Teaching children about the food cycle is important because otherwise they don't have perspective and they think things just magically appear on the table, she said. And it connects why they're at the fair and seeing animals and plants and learning about that and how it pertains to them and the things they consume. Stephanie Spots and her three sons, Maverick 5, Ezekiel 4, and 6-month-old Dawson, made their first stop at McCormick's stand, making bracelets about the food supply chain. The fair experience is incredible because my family grew up as farmers in Michigan, Spot said. And so letting them experience something like this, even from more of a city standpoint, is nice for them. But her older sons were more excited for something else, Spot said. This is the first time they will actually get to experience rides at the fair, she said. They've never gotten to do that before, and they're a bit adventurous, so I'm excited to see what they do. The McLean County Fair continues from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, July 31st, and Saturday, August 1st, and from noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday, August 2nd. Information about tickets, events, and schedules can be found at https://mcleancountyfair.org. Our next front page story is about Logan County, headlined, Data Center Critics Say Go To Meetings. This story is datelined Latham. Opponents of a proposed 500-megawatt data center outside Latham met Wednesday to call for Logan County residents to educate themselves and attend two county meetings next week. Plans to develop the data center may include the annexation of the land into the village to bypass any potential regulations imposed by the Logan County Board. In response, county residents opposing the project are banding together to oppose the data center at the municipal and county levels. On Wednesday, roughly 100 of those residents met at the Latham Fire Department headquarters to learn more about data centers. Presenters encouraged residents to educate themselves and attend Logan County's Regional Planning Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals meetings next week. The Planning Commission meeting will be at 6 p.m. Wednesday, and the Zoning Board of Appeals meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. Thursday. Both meetings will be at the Oasis Senior Center at 2810 Woodlawn Road in Lincoln. Right now, we don't have all the pieces, said Allison Isley, who is running for a Logan County Board seat in the 4th District. We don't have all the information. Studies are being done all the time, and so it feels extremely irresponsible to welcome these things in without all that information. In December, Hut 8, the Miami-based developer behind the project, applied to rezone 250 acres of agricultural land outside of Latham to industrial use in order to build the data center. Representatives of Hut 8 stated during previous public hearings that the project would bring around 1,500 construction jobs and around 200 full-time jobs. However, Isley said her own research suggests that around 20 employees would be on site at a time. Amanda Maxheimer, a founder of Sustain Logan County Communities, also challenged Hut 8's claims that the project would bring $65 million in additional property tax revenue annually. After speaking with Jennifer Bryant, Logan County's Supervisor of Assessments, Maxheimer said she believes the revenue may be around $16 million annually. Hut 8's initial application was withdrawn after the Logan County Board requested time to draft an ordinance regulating these sites. The board passed a 60-day moratorium on data centers in February to gather more information on a potential ordinance, but by the time the moratorium expired, the county board did not have a complete data center ordinance. Although the county board then voted in May to approve a 12-month moratorium, it failed to bring the measure before the Regional Planning Commission or the Zoning Board of Appeals, which rendered the vote invalid. But because the board believed there was a moratorium in place, it voted down an amended ordinance to regulate data centers. This ordinance, as presented, would have required a water feasibility study to be performed to ensure water quality and would have imposed civil penalties of up to $200,000 for ordinance violations. In June, Hut 8 filed another rezoning application with the county for a data center, this time expanding its footprint from 250 acres to 720 acres. Concurrently, the developer worked with the village of Latham in an effort to annex the property, which would take the project out of the hands of the Logan County Board. Maxheimer said a separate rezoning application from Hut 8 to the village seeks to establish a new business district that would allow data centers. Residents also voiced concerns that the developer would gain access to the Mahomet Aquifer, an underground water source for much of central Illinois, if the land was annexed to the village. Water use for cooling data centers is a common criticism of such projects. However, HUD 8 proposed a closed-loop system for the data center, which it said uses a fixed volume of coolant that would be shipped into the community, and the project would require local water resources only for its plumbing. Representatives from HUD 8 did not respond to multiple requests for comment on their latest application. As of Wednesday, roughly 1,200 signatures have been collected from residents opposed to the data center. We're just trying to help direct conversations, but it is a community effort, Maxheimer said. And our last front page story is about the Commerce Department, headlined, Economic Growth Slows in the Spring. Trade, War, and Consumer Spending and AI Shape GDP. This is a Reuters story, Dateline Washington. U.S. economic growth slowed in the second quarter amid a widening in the trade deficit, but robust consumer spending and business investment related to the build-out of artificial intelligence infrastructure underscored strong domestic demand. The moderation reported by the Commerce Department in its snapshot of gross domestic product on Thursday also reflected continued inventory drawdown to meet the strong domestic demand. The report suggested the economy largely weathered the Middle East conflict last quarter, though renewed hostilities between the United States and Iran posed a downside risk to growth in the second half of the year. Broader tax refunds this year from President Donald Trump's tax and spending bill, which helped to fuel consumer spending last quarter, are behind, leaving households without a cushion as gasoline prices resume their upward trend. With the saving rate at a four-year low, consumers are unlikely to continue dipping into savings to maintain their spending, adding to the economy's growing vulnerabilities, economists said. Underlying growth is solid but unlikely to be sustained, said Oliver Allen, senior U.S. economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. Gross domestic product increased at a 1.5% annualized rate last year, the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis said in its advance estimate of second quarter GDP. Economists polled by Reuters forecast GDP rising at a 2.1% pace. Estimates range from 0.8% rate to a 2.9% pace. But the survey was conducted before the release of June's Advanced Economic Indicators report, which showed a moderate contraction in the goods trade deficit and retail inventories unchanged. That data prompted some economists to cut their GDP estimates by as much as 0.8 percentage point. The economy grew at a 2.1% pace in the first quarter. Consumer spending, which accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, surged at a 3.2% rate after abruptly slowing to a 0.5% growth pace in the January to March quarter. In addition to larger tax refunds, spending was boosted by higher-income households that are benefiting from strong growth in asset prices, but a recent stock market sell-off could slow the momentum. The recently ended FIFA World Cup tournament also likely added to the strength, as did midterm election-related spending by nonprofits. The AI investment boom, which shows no signs of slowing despite investor concerns that valuations of many technology companies have become stretched, also helped to boost domestic demand. Business spending on equipment increased at a 15.2% pace, notching a second straight quarter of double-digit growth. But the AI build-out is heavily reliant on imports, contributing to a widening in the trade deficit. The trade shortfall sliced off 1.01 percentage points from GDP growth, the most since the first quarter of 2025. A large increase in imports is normally offset by a rise in inventories. but inventories continue to be depleted because of the strong domestic demand. Inventories subtracted 0.67 percentage point from GDP growth. Government spending contracted at a 0.8% pace as federal outlays declined at a 4.1% rate, imposing a small drag on GDP growth. Final sales to private domestic purchasers, which excludes trade inventories and government spending, increased at a 3.9% pace. That was the fastest increase in this measure of domestic demand since the first quarter of 2023, and followed a 1.7% pace of growth in the January to March quarter. U.S. stocks opened higher, the dollar slipped against a basket of currencies, and the U.S. Treasury yields rose. The Federal Reserve on Wednesday left its benchmark overnight interest rate in a 3.5 to 3.75% range. Three members of the U.S. Central Bank's Policy Setting Committee dissented. They preferred a quarter percentage point hike. The Fed described economic activity as expanding at a solid pace despite elevated uncertainty that owes in part to the conflict in the Middle East. Economists expected the Fed to raise interest rates as soon as September to quell inflation, which also factored into their expectations for a slower economic growth in the second half. Average gasoline prices are back above $4 a gallon. The strength in demand last quarter was accompanied by a surge in inflation. The price index for gross domestic purchases, a key measure of inflation in the U.S. economy, increased at a 5.7% pace. That was the fastest in 4 years and followed a 3.6% rate of increase in the first quarter. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index rose at a 5.1% rate after advancing at a 4.6% pace in the January to March quarter. Excluding food and energy, the so-called core PCE inflation increased at a 3.4% pace. The Fed tracks the PCE inflation measures for its 2% target. Though other dates from the BEA on Thursday showed PCE inflation easing in June, economists shrugged off the moderation and expected price pressures to rise because of the escalation in the Middle East conflict. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, Saybrook Man Accused of Burglary, Dateline Bloomington. A Saybrook man has been released after police said he broke into the home of his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. Gavin W. Tomes, 21, is charged with residential burglary, a Class 1 felony, criminal damage to property, a Class 4 felony, and criminal trespass to a residence, a Class A misdemeanor. He appeared Wednesday afternoon before Judge Amy McFarland for his initial appearance, during which Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt filed a petition to detain him. According to the probable cause statement read by Fitt, on Monday, two Saybrook residents discovered Tomes had broken into their home. One of the residents received an alert from a motion sensor camera about 9:30 p.m. and saw Tomes on camera inside the home damaging property, Fitt said. They reported he damaged a television, PlayStation gaming console, soundbar, dog kennel, and more. The resident who reported the incident to police said the damage exceeded $1,200. When the two residents returned home, Tomes was still there. One resident punched Tomes in the face before he ran away, the prosecutor said. The man who lives in the Saybrook home told police a relative who lives with him is dating Tomes' ex-girlfriend, Fitt said. The residents told police a few weeks earlier they had removed Tomes from the home after he left a bullet, which had the relative's name carved into it, in the relative's room, according to the probable cause statement. After their reported break-in Monday, police found Tomes at his home. The clothes he was seen wearing on the surveillance camera were in his bedroom, Fitt said. On Tuesday, Tomes told police he had been drinking at a bar and walked to the residence to talk to the relative or go do something, according to the probable cause statement. He told officers he went into the home, smashed the TV, and made the house a mess more than it already was, Fitz said. In arguing for his release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said Tomes is not a risk, noting he is accused of committing these offenses after he had been drinking. Wallace argued Tomes had been compliant with police and took responsibility for the incident. The defense attorney said Tomes showed a high likelihood of complying with pretrial release conditions and suggested the judge order he not be allowed to consume alcohol while the case is pending. McFarland denied the state's petition to detain. She said although he had gone into a person's home, a place where they'd expect to have safety, conditions could be imposed to mitigate the risk he poses. She ruled he be released with orders to report to pretrial supervision, to undergo an alcohol evaluation and complete recommended treatment, and not to consume or possess alcohol or drugs. McFarland also ordered he have no contact with the Saybrook address or the residence, and he is scheduled for an arraignment at 9 a.m. August 21st. And this next story is headlined, Rivian Seeks Tariff Refund. EV maker sues feds over invalidated tax, no amount listed. This story is datelined Normal. Rivian is suing the federal government, seeking a refund for the tariffs it paid on imported automotive products. Rivian Automotive filed the complaint July 23rd in the U.S. Court of International Trade against the United States, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and Commissioner Rodney Scott. The electric automaker, which manufactures its trucks, SUVs, and vans in Normal, wants the trade courts to declare the tariffs unlawful as applied to its imports, order Customs and Border Protection to recalculate affected import entries, and direct the government to refund the duties with interest. The lawsuit does not state how much Rivian paid or expects to recover. It also does not identify the affected products, their countries of origin, or whether they were used at Rivian's manufacturing plant in Normal. Although the complaint does not disclose how much Rivian is seeking, TechCrunch reported July 24th that Chief Financial Officer Claire McDonough said in April the company could receive a tariff refund worth tens of millions of dollars. Rivian did not respond to questions about the amount sought, the imported products, or their connection to the Normal plant. According to the complaint, Rivian imports automotive products for distribution and for further manufacturing into completed vehicles. President Donald Trump began imposing tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act in February 2025. The orders initially covered imports from Canada, Mexico, and China. Trump later invoked the law to impose a 10% baseline tariff on imports from most countries, with higher rates for certain countries. Rivian said it sources products from countries covered by the tariffs, but did not identify those countries in the complaint. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled February 20th that the Emergency Powers Law, known as IEEPA, does not authorize the president to impose tariffs. Rivian said it filed its own case because the Supreme Court's ruling does not necessarily guarantee refunds for every importer that paid the tariffs. Importers that have paid IEEPA tariffs, including plaintiffs, are not guaranteed a refund, Rivian's attorneys wrote. The company is asking the trade court to order Customs and Border Protection to reliquidate affected entries. Liquidation is the customs process used to make a final calculation of the duties owed on an imported shipment. Reliquidation would allow the agency to recalculate those entries without the challenged tariffs. Rivian is seeking a full refund of the IEEPA tariffs collected from or assessed against the company, along with interest. It also is seeking its legal costs and attorney's fees. And here is some news from the What's Happening section. Local favorites at downtown concert. The final Saturdays on the Square concert of the summer will feature two local favorites in downtown Bloomington this weekend. Chicago Farmer and the Field Notes, an Americana folk band, and Bloomington native and singer-songwriter Dan Hubbard will take the stage Saturday, August 1st, closing out the summer concert series hosted by the Castle Theater in partnership with Pantograph Media and the City of Bloomington. Both musicians have performed in previous Saturdays on the Square concert and at several venues throughout Bloomington Normal. Saturday's show is free and open to all ages. The downtown Museum Square will open at 6 p.m. with music starting at 7 at the corner of Main and Jefferson Streets. Several streets in downtown will also be closed ahead of the performance. Food trucks, refreshments, and alcohol will also be available on site, including an El Bandido Yankee Tequila Margarita stand. And the Bloomington Ice Center to reopen. The Bloomington Ice Center at 101 South Madison Street is set to reopen Saturday, August 1. The Ice Center was closed for about 6 weeks for annual cleaning, maintenance, and upgrades. The city said those upgrades included new flooring, an upgraded sound system, and LED lighting for cosmic skating events. Several Ice Center programs return next week, including Learn to Skate, Learn to Play Hockey, youth hockey clinics, and adult hockey leagues. Open skate time will begin at 2 p.m. Sunday and will be offered from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. throughout each week. Freestyle skate will open from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Saturday and will continue to be offered at varying times throughout each week. Admission is $7 per skater and skate rentals are $3 per person. And American Pickers visiting Illinois and Iowa. American Pickers, a History Channel documentary series, is hitting the road for Illinois and Iowa this September. The show follows skilled pickers who look for the most valuable items in curio cabinets, attics, barns, basements, and other out-of-the-way places throughout the United States. They are always on the lookout for historically significant or rare items, unforgettable characters, and their collections, while learning new things about the past along the way, according to a news release. The show is seeking leads for those with unique items, a story to tell, and ready to sell things that they've never seen before from their personal collection within Illinois and Iowa. American Pickers is only interested in personal collections and not stores, flea markets, malls, auction businesses, museums, or anything open to the public. Those who are interested can reach out to American Pickers at cineflix.com or leave a voicemail at 646-493-2184. Individuals are asked to provide their name, phone number, location, town and state, and description and location of the collection or items with photos in order to be considered. Their most wanted items include motorcycles and scooters, old signs and advertising, vintage toys, oil and gas station items, pedal cars and bicycles, early furniture, vending machines, pinball and jukeboxes, folk art, military items, taxidermy, and unusual collections. And here is today's Flick Fact question. Times are changing, so is the danger involved with jobs, and a Chicago personal injury law firm has analyzed data to establish a list of the 2026 dangerous jobs that nobody talks about. It's topped by company CEOs of positions formerly little thought of as dangerous, but no more. Can you name today's other not so often thought of as dangerous jobs today? The answer, number two, are collection agents and those who deliver eviction notices, followed by overnight motel clerks, loading dock workers, roadside construction workers, real estate agents who meet unscreened clients alone in vacant houses or open house settings, and counselors of any kind. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, July 31st, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.